You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday the 20th of April 2021 and you're listening to me, Sir Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today we're going to have a look at an attempt to falsify Britain's history, an attempt to pretend that Britain was always multicultural. Now, I've pointed out before that a lot of this relies upon claiming that people that came to Britain from North Africa were in actual fact African blacks, when Carthage, which was settled by the Phoenicians some centuries before Christ, they were white. And when they had the Punic Wars with Rome and they lost, Rome took over Carthage. And obviously the Romans were white. And then about the 4th or the 5th century, the Vandals came in and they invaded Rome and they invaded North Africa and they took over. And the Vandals were obviously white. They were a Germanic tribe. We then are told that the king of the Vandals came to Ireland, conquered Ireland, came to Britain, helped the Saxons to conquer the Welsh and finally drive the Welsh out of England. And he then went onto the continent and had lots of battles in France. I think this was about the 7th or the 8th century. So you can basically say that North Africa was white from about 1000 BC up to 800 AD, 900 AD. I'm not quite sure when the Muslims invaded North Africa. And the records of the African king coming to Britain, which is talked about in the history of the kings of Britain and elsewhere in our oldest histories, that is referring to the king of the Vandals. It is not referring to some black African king from the Congo. But that hasn't stopped so-called historians trying to portray it in that way. And they also talk about North Africans that were here with the Romans when we had a treaty with Rome. And Britain was a part of the Roman Empire. We had North Africans here. We had people from Carthage, but they were white. They weren't black. And we have this lady today, which we're going to talk about, who is called Florence Scott. And she seems to have devoted herself to portraying this image of a multicultural Britain from millennia ago. And we're talking about it today because she's just brought out a blog post and a little podcast where she tries to make mountains out of molehills, I guess you could say. She provides two pieces of evidence for this, and I've had a look at both of those, and we'll get into those. But essentially what she is saying is that Britain always had black people in it, and she really doesn't seem to understand much about biology either, or how people come to be black in the first place. But we'll get into that as we go along. She says, in 1967 to 72, an archaeological excavation was conducted on a cemetery in the village of North Elmham, Norfolk. One of the human burials investigated, of a person aged 34 to 45, was deemed to belong to a woman from Africa, based on analysis on her skull. The archaeological report was published in 1980, and the use of language by its authors, Wells and Caton, is extremely racist. They state that she is black, although a different, offensive and dehumanising term is used, and they make comments that present her as an outsider. Well, if we think back, this is 40 years ago, then terminology was different back then. And what we're actually talking about here is an archaeological excavation. So we are likely to be talking about the use of biological terms for people. And you need to be accurate with this. You need to, the whole point is that this body, they claim, was black. And you can't just say black. I mean, you can't just point to a skull and say it's a black skull, because that is not being accurate, is it? You have Negroid skulls, you have Caucasoid skulls, you have Mongoloid skulls, and that's the correct definition for them. And obviously, these people that were doing this dig were trying to be accurate in what they are saying. And quite clearly, she was an outsider. She was not an Anglo-Saxon. She had obviously come from somewhere else. If we actually look at the report, because she does link to the report, this is the exact language of this archaeological report. The existence of the Negress inhumation number 5 is fascinating, to say the least. Little more can be added to Dr. Wells' comments, except to underline the point that this was not a remote descendant from a Roman slave imported 6 or 8 centuries earlier. In a skeleton as defective as this, it would be risky to assert that she was an absolutely pure African. But if not, her Negroid genes can have been diluted to only little extent. It shows once again that the extent of cultural contact between these peoples was often much greater than we normally suppose. A very short Negro girl, brought up the slave routes from Black Africa, would have provided infinite curiosity in Anglo-Saxon Norfolk. One wonders if she was not the star performer in the programme of a travelling entertainer who set up his stall at fairs and markets, which no doubt took place frequently at Elmham. I can't see anything that is racist in that, they are supposed to be inferring whatever they can from this skeleton. And that's exactly what they are doing here. Now, they point out that it was risky to assert that she's an absolutely pure African, but it says her Negroid genes can have been diluted to only a little extent. Now, what that means is she cannot have come from a family that was living in Britain, because those genes would have been diluted, wouldn't they, by the white people that would have been interbreeding with that family. That's why they say that she has to have been an outsider. If she had been descended from slaves that were allegedly black in Roman times, then over the period of 500 or 600 years, as those black slaves interbred with the white people, they would have got less and less of those Negroid traits in the bones and in the skull. That's why they are pointing this out. The very fact that it was an almost purely Negroid skull shows that it cannot have been a descendant from black slaves from years ago. And you can see it's awkward to use the terminology here, because today we try to be very careful about this use of the word Negro. But using it here is being used in a biological and historical sense. Now, they point out that it may well have been that she was a star performer. And I would suggest that that's probably correct. I don't think she would have been a slave. It was the Welsh that were used as slaves by the Anglo-Saxons. Why would they bother to import someone from the other side of the world to use as a slave? I don't think that's believable, that there were plenty of Welsh that they could use for slaves, which they did. I think if they had this short black African there, I think she would have been a curiosity and may well have been exhibited as a curiosity, the same as happened with the Hottentot Venus centuries later in France, who was exhibited around. Elizabeth Bartman, I believe her name was, and people were fascinated by her because she looked so different to everybody else. And you can imagine the same thing would have happened here with the Anglo-Saxons. She says, getting back to Florence here, she says, they call her a cuckoo in an Anglo-Saxon nest, creating the image of her as a parasitic intruder. Well, I don't think they are. I think what they're saying, as a cuckoo in the nest, they're pointing out that she is actually different to the others in the nest, quite clearly. You've got a completely different subspecies there. You've got the negroid subspecies amongst the caucasoid subspecies. So that's why they're pointing that out. They're not calling her a parasite in any way. They suggest that she may have been a star performer in a program of a traveling entertainer. Florence continues, her very presence in the cemetery is repeatedly called a problem. Well, it is, because we don't understand how she got there, because she's not a native species to Britain. She's not a native species to Europe. So it's interesting how she got there. And the way that we can try to work out why she was there is by extrapolating from the history that is around at the time, and also what they found in the burial. And what they found was that there was nobody else in the cemetery of the same race. Nobody else at all. So this was an odd one out. It was not somebody that had history in the area, not somebody that is native to Britain, not somebody that had friends of her own race that were in the same area, because this was just this one body alone that was found in the cemetery. Florence continues, she is heavily sexualized and exoticized by the authors as they contrast her exoticism with the homespun community in which she was found. Well, she is exotic, isn't she? I mean, she is the definition of the word exotic. She's from an exotic part of the world. She's from a hot part of the world with a completely different climate. Florence says, they speculate that perhaps she was a full-time branded slave girl. Perhaps she was a waif brought by a local magnate who hoped that the charms of this little black pearl would give him status as a collector of living Fabergé jewels by titillating the curiosity of his neighbours. Or maybe she was the fancy of a merchant bringing home a souvenir from Cordoba for his wife. And I'm not sure how any of that is sexualizing things. I mean, it may be a bit of an extravagant imagination there, but they're trying to imagine reasons for why there would be a member of a different race in Britain at this time, which is completely out of the ordinary. It's proved that it's out of the ordinary because Florence can only find two pieces of evidence. Florence can only find evidence for two black people being in Britain, and even that is not definite evidence, as we will see, and also that there was nobody else that was like them that was buried in the cemetery, so that they had quite clearly travelled here from abroad. They were not; they didn't have grandparents in that cemetery. They didn't have great-grandparents. They'd obviously travelled here. She says, in these interpretations of this woman's life, she is merely a fanciful object, the victim of someone's whims with no story of her own. Well, she was female. All females had to be looked after by males. They were not capable of looking after themselves. They have a third less body strength. And to make their way over to Britain all on their own is just not possible, is it? She had to have come over here with somebody else, probably traders. I don't see how this is racist or insulting, unless you're going to say that it's racist to try to work out the circumstances of any burial of somebody in the past that happens to be of a different race. It's not stereotyping or anything like that. It's trying to work out the reasons why this person was there. It's trying to bring history alive. Florence says she is racialized and objectified and assumed to be a slave or victim. Racialized? I mean, the whole point of this is to find out that she's of a different race. If they hadn't discovered that this body was of a different race, Florence would have nothing to talk about. Florence herself is racializing this. Race is it's a fact of life. That's how they're able to say that this body was likely belonging to a black female. She says it is important to note that apart from her small stature compared to the other women in the cemetery, there is nothing in the archaeological report that indicates her burial was any different from anyone else's. Well, there's no reason for why it would be, but it does show that there was nobody else there that was of her race, which shows that she wasn't native to the area. Next, she brings up another instance. She says in 2013, two children found a human skull from the 10th century in the River Colne in Fairford, likely a regular early medieval burial accidentally disturbed by the changing course of the river. The rest of her remains, apart from the small bones of the hands and feet, were uncovered, and a forensic anthropologist concluded that the skeleton belonged to a woman aged 18 to 24 from sub-Saharan Africa. And like in the first instance here, there were no other black bodies that were found, no remains of anybody else that they identified as black. It was just this one woman, which the anthropologist suggested may have been from sub-Saharan Africa. Now, sub-Saharan Africa means Negro. Obviously, you also get the Bedouin tribes, which are Caucasian. You do get Caucasian Africans as well. This is why you can't just say African, because there are all different racial types that live in Africa. You get the Berbers, that they're African. She continues, there is no archaeological report available on her remains, but there are a handful of news reports available online. In an interview, local historian Richard Martin tells the IB Times that slavery was quite common back then, along with bonded servitude. It will be interesting to know which barons were living in the area at the time who might have employed her or owned her. If she was a sub-Saharan African, then she was almost certainly a bonded servant, as it is highly unlikely she came here only to travel. At the time, people believed that bodies needed to be treated reverently to achieve an afterlife. If her remains were thrown into the water, it is unlikely that she had any status. So again, they're trying to work out from the situation of the body the circumstances of what was happening here. Now it could have been that the river changed course, but if it was the case that the river had changed course, you would expect to have found other bodies that were in this river as well, and they didn't. They only found this one body. So, I mean, there may have been foul play that was involved here, but we just don't know. And to be honest, we don't know for certain that she was a sub-Saharan African either. Because she continues and she says, so what does the evidence really show? Well, firstly, it is important to remain critical of the methods used to determine the African, she puts that in quotes, origins of these two women. In both cases, it appears that cranial measurement, the shape of their skulls, was used to determine their African origin. And again, I'll just stop there because they're not trying to determine what country they come from. They're trying to determine what race they are from. And that's why you would measure the skulls. If you look at the skull shape, if you look at a black person's skull, they have a smaller brain cavity and they have a jaw which juts out further. It's called prognathism, is when you have a jaw that juts out like that. And when you look at the Chinese, for instance, they have different skulls as well. So you can tell what race somebody is just by looking at their skull. This is what forensic science is all about. This is what forensic detectives do. And they don't use fuzzy language like African origins, because there are all different races that live in Africa. You've got pygmies that live in Africa. You've got Congolese that live in Africa. You've got Somalian. You've got Maasai. You've got the San people, the Bushmen. You've got all different subsets of the Negro race in Africa, and you want to be accurate with these things, as accurate as you can possibly be. But she's saying that this method used to actually determine them, she says, this is a highly interpretive and problematic method of analysis, although it is still widely practiced in archaeology in lieu of more involved forensic methods such as isotopic or DNA analysis. Without this more accurate and indicative analysis on the remains of either women, and with a lack of clear written evidence about how conclusions were reached, it is difficult to conclusively say whether they are indeed from Africa. So she really disproves her theory here and says that they may not be African after all, because it was just taken from cranial measurements. She continues, cranial analysis on the so-called Black Viking, found at the St. Bennet's Churchyard site in York, concluded that he was African, prompting interpretations by the Jorvik Centre that he was a foreign Arab merchant. with a display of such a man being constructed in the museum. And one of the references she used here is talking about this Jorvik Center and how the first thing you see when you go in there is this supposed Black Viking. And this was based on the fact that the remains that they found here, or one of these remains that they claimed was black. She says, however, isotopic analysis on his bones demonstrated that he was entirely local. She says, it is important to stress that the fact this man did not grow up in Africa does not mean that he was not a black person. It simply means that if the cranial interpretations are correct, and he was indeed black, he was a black man from York. But that's not what this is saying, is it? If the isotopic analysis shows that he was entirely local, which meant that he had been living there for years, that means that he was white, and that means that the cranial measurements were wrong, because they didn't find any other people with these sorts of cranial measurements. They didn't find anybody else that they could say was black. And if this was somebody that had been living there for years, because the isotopic analysis will measure the sort of plants and the food that somebody has been eating, and so that would show that the body was indeed local, had been there for a long time. And if it was indeed black, then there would have been other black people that had been buried there, and they weren't. So what this tells us is that there is somebody with an odd-shaped skull, basically. You'd always get exceptions to the rule. So this tells us that the cranial measurements were in error in this point. But she doesn't think that. She thinks that there have been black people living for generations in York. She says there is evidence to suggest that in the Roman period, 11 to 12% of burials in York are people of African descent based on cranial analysis, while nearly half of all Roman British sites that have undergone isotopic analysis have revealed at least one person who grew up in Africa. And again, the one where they did this isotopic analysis and said that somebody had grown up in Africa, that was at the time when the Vandals were there. And this measurement, this cranial analysis that they are doing here, it cannot show that these people were black, because we didn't have Negroes as part of the Roman Empire. It was Carthage. The Negroes were sub-Saharan. Sub-Saharan Negroes. They were couldn't even get to Carthage. So what would they have been doing in Britain? What would they have been doing as being 11 to 12% of the burials in York? They can't have been. They must have been white people that just had a smaller skull capacity. She says these people did not simply vanish when the medieval period began. Well, it looks like they did, because there's no mention of black people being here. And we should expect that they had many descendants who made up a large portion of the population in early medieval England. So she's found two bodies that she thinks are black. Then she's discredited the fact that they're black, because we discovered that the cranial measurements must have been wrong. And so because she's found these two bodies, she extrapolates from there that there must have been generations of black people here. She also says, we also know of particular notable examples of Africans in Britain, such as the influential 7th century scholar and teacher St. Adrian of Canterbury. And again, 7th century. A 7th century African is going to be from the Vandal tribe, the Germanic tribe, the Vandals, because they were the ones in North Africa at the time. She says, if there were indeed such established trade routes in existence in the 10th century between Britain and Africa, that would have supported a slave trade. Why? It wouldn't. Because as we had the Welsh here to use as slaves by the Saxons, and the Normans had the Saxons here to use as slaves. There was no need to start importing sub-Saharan Negroes into Britain to use as slaves. We had a source of slaves. We had an unlimited source of slaves of our own. She says, it shows rather a lack of imagination to conclude that these women must have been slaves or descendants of slaves. They may well have been migrants or merchants or the descendants of migrants or merchants. Well, no, they wouldn't have been. They would have been, they could possibly have been shown in a sideshow sort of thing as a curiosity. But you wouldn't have had women travelling on their own as travelling across to Europe as sub-Saharan Negroes. They didn't even invent a sail for a boat, and they wouldn't have been merchants as women travelling on their own. They had to have been something different, I think. And the fact that she talks about these going on for generations when she just finds the odd body here, that is impossible, because if you look at how important the caste system was to the Anglo-Saxons, it was completely unacceptable for somebody from a princely caste, say, to marry somebody from a tradesman caste. That was known as being completely unacceptable, and all you have to do is read the Book of the Danes to see that. It has a fable in it, or a moral story trying to get the moral across, that was completely unacceptable. So if it was completely unacceptable for somebody from a princely class to marry somebody from a tradesman class, how much more unacceptable is it going to be for them to marry somebody from a different race, from the other side of the world? It's going to be completely unacceptable. It just would not have happened. So this is why they just find the odd body on its own without anybody else and without any other bodies that look similar, is because they were here on their own. That's if the cranial measurements are correct. She says, in order to find the North Elmham woman or the Fairford woman's true place in history, we must reassess the false preconceptions we might hold about the inherent whiteness of early medieval England. These two black women probably had networks of friends and family members in their communities. Well, they didn't, because they are bodies on their own. They're solitary bodies on their own. There weren't any others that were found in the graveyard. She says they knew the landscape. How does she know that? She says they worked hard at their daily chores, like preparing food. She doesn't know that either. And they held and practiced religious beliefs alongside other members of their community. Well, it doesn't seem like that if one of them was thrown in the river to die when everybody else was buried in the churchyard. That would tend to suggest that whoever it was did not practice the same religious beliefs as the people that threw her in the river. She says they were likely wives and possibly mothers. Again, so where are the remains of their children if they were wives and mothers? We don't have any remains of the children. We have these solitary remains. She says they were simply people with no idea that one day they would be treated like a problem to be solved. I don't think they are being treated like a problem to be solved. It's just being investigated to try and tell us more about our history. But it's being politicised by people like Florence that want to portray this false idea that Britain was always multicultural when it wasn't. And they also want to portray a false idea that civilizations in Africa that were built by white people were actually built by black people. They're trying to erase white history and pretend that it doesn't exist, and they're trying to hand that history over to other races, even though these other races did not even come out with a boat with a sail on it to actually make their way out at sea. And they lived in sub-Saharan Africa. They were below the Sahara. So if they're actually called that, and that was the name of them, the sub-Saharan Negro is the actual specific anthropological designation for them. How did they get up above the Sahara into North Africa? Well, they didn't, because they were sub-Sahara. They couldn't actually cross the Sahara because it was this big desert. There was no water there. There was no way that they could actually get across there themselves. I guess they could have been taken across there by some of these Arab slavers. But again, why would you want to have a black slave in Britain when you could have a Welsh slave or you could have a Saxon slave? They want to portray this image. I mean, she's guilty of it. She's trying to portray this image that black people could have only been slaves, because that's what she's repeating here. And then she's saying, but they might have been merchants or they might have been traders. Well, they can't have been, because women travelling on their own could not have been traders or merchants. They needed men to be looking after them. Anyway, I'm sure we'll hear more from Florence in the future, because she does seem to have dedicated her work to trying to promote this false idea of Britain being full of black people centuries ago, when quite clearly it wasn't. So we'll keep an eye on her and see if we can debunk more of her work in the future. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.